Welcome everybody to the meditation class, the cheapest and the best in the Western Hemisphere. So just waiting for a few more people to come in. As usual, just to announce that those people who are coming to the Introduction to Meditation class, the first series of talks for those who haven't meditated before, that is in the room to my right. So here, having meditated before and having more experience, being able to sit quietly, then come into this class here, where instead of just talking about just basic things of meditation, we can get a little bit more interesting teachings on meditation, some deeper teachings which may help you. So we'll just wait for people to arrive and find their spot on the floor, on the chairs, wherever you can find the power. Okay, so it's just gone three now, so I can begin. So when we do our meditation, sometimes that we can be a little bit unsure what we're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to be choosing to watch, and especially that sometimes that people get feelings of aches and pains in their body. If you do have feelings of discomfort in the body during the middle of the meditation, the first thing to do is, you know, if it is something which is an ache or a pain or a scratch or a sneeze, it's much better to just to disturb the meditation a tiny bit and have that sneeze, or adjust the legs, or just move the posture slightly, because just a little disturbance like that, it's just common sense that a little bit of movement, you know, stops the pain, the discomfort, which means that you can carry on and get deeper into meditation. It was just that you didn't put your posture in the right place to begin with, or you didn't sort of adjust it correctly, or something happened. It is best to adjust even in the middle of the meditation. You do go backwards in meditation, but not that far, and you can soon make up lost ground. However, that sometimes this trying to go past an irritation by movement or scratching or something, it doesn't really work. So you have to do something else. And what we do next is to try and incorporate whatever that irritation or pain is into our meditation. By doing that, it is a little bit of understanding what this difficulty is. An example is some years ago, not at this time of the year, when it was the summertime and, well, just the beginning of summer, when there was lots of flies in this hall. When I was giving an example just before the meditation began, that flies in Australia, they're not dangerous, they don't carry diseases, they're just inquisitive. For some reason, they like to explore up your nose and in your ears. And they're not dangerous at all, but they can be quite tickly. So when I said that, I said, well, if a fly lands on you, just let it land on you. You don't need to try and blow it off, or you don't need to sort of swish it off, because it will just go to somebody else. Out of compassion, just let it explore you. And it's only a small thing, it won't last. And of course, what happens when I say such things, I get instant karma, because as soon as I started meditating, you wouldn't believe it, a fly started landing on my mouth. And in those days, even then, it was all videoed. So I thought, oh my goodness, if I try and brush that fly away, it's going to be recorded and I'll be a hypocrite. And if I do the other trick, which is with your eyes closed, that too would be caught. So I thought, okay, I've got to practice what I preach. So as an example, you get a little fly in your nose, and I think, what happens? It didn't want to go up my nose, and I wouldn't want to go up there, but what it did do, it actually just decided to walk around the outside of my lips. And it was interesting, because it must have been a Buddhist fly. The reason why I call it a Buddhist fly, because it did what we did a week ago for the Waisak ceremony. It did the circumambulation. It went around three times, always keeping its right side towards the object of veneration, which was my mouth. So it went clockwise around my mouth three times, and I discovered something very interesting. This is called insight. You just leave it alone and you find the insight. The insight was that the corners of my mouth are far more sensitive than the top of the bottom. So when it was walking around very, very slowly, what I conclude was mindfully, not rushing things, just taking it easy, then the fly went down. When it got to the edges of the mouth, now that was really irritating and itchy. But I always knew that once it got past the edge, the rest was much more tolerable. So then it came around, and when it came here, it comes again. This is going to be hard to endure. It was really itchy over here and itchy over there. And after three times round, ended up back where it started, then it flew off. Which is, you know, the three times thing. We always do that in Buddhism. That's why it must have been a Buddhist fly. Circumambulated, paid respect to my mouth, and then flew off. So the point was that you allowed the experience to be. It was a little bit irritating, but instead of trying to ignore it, you actually made peace with it. And this is one of the reasons why, if there is such an irritation, a pain, an ache anywhere in your body, especially if it happens in the middle of the meditation, the best way of putting this is the old Emperor's Three Questions meditation technique. Now is the most important time. It's the only time. There's no other time except for now. So in other words, forget how many circuits that fly is going to go. Never think just how long you can last with this ache or pain. Never think of the future, because if you think of the future, that is torture. Just stay in the moment. This moment, you're bearing with this. It's tolerable just, but you're here. You're with this moment. That's all you need. So first of all, now is really important time. And of course, the other thing with the Emperor's Three Questions, the most important person. I'm saying this because I was just in Melbourne last week doing a little mini retreat, and this kept coming up. And I said, well, just who's the most important person? They said, you know, because of Western psychology, that, you know, oneself is the most important person. Of course, that's wrong. The most important person is the one right in front of you. That's the Emperor's Three Questions. And so in meditation, what's the most important meditation object to be aware of? Whatever is in front of your mind right now. So if you've got an ache or a pain or an itchy fly just going around your mouth, that is the most important meditation object in the whole world. Give it real big importance. So don't try and get rid of it. Don't try and diminish its importance. Don't try and, you know, turn your mind away from it. It's important, it's there right now. And so when you give it importance, that's the first way of solving the problem. And the next thing is, what do we do with it? And that's where you don't try and cure it, you care for it. You don't try and get rid of it, you embrace it. You don't try and avoid it, you learn from it. And you learn from so much from things you'd rather avoid. But it's here right in front of you. You can't avoid it. It's here. So you care for it. And that Emperor's Three Questions way of meditating answers so many problems which you may have during your meditation practice. When the meditation doesn't go, you know, smooth smoothly, like sometimes I describe. You just sit here, you calm your body, you calm your peaceometer, you watch the breath. The breath gets delightful, the breath gets very smooth, and it starts to disappear, and you see the beautiful lights, and you get blissed out, and then you go into deep meditation, you go into the jhanas, you have a wonderful time, you come out enlightened with all the psychic powers. It doesn't always work like that. You do have little problems to deal with. And this is actually a lot of how we deal with those problems. They're here. So you're aware of them. You give them importance. And you care for them. Somehow or other, they've come and they deserve to be respected. They come for you to learn from. So you care for them, learn from them, and then you find you transcend them. So if you do have an ache or pain in the body, it comes up in the meditation. If movement doesn't solve the problem, then that pain, that discomfort, that little itch, especially, you know, not my example of a fly, it's not going to kill me, it's just irritating. So you care for it. You just investigate, make it interesting. And then you find, when you care for it, it soon disappears and vanishes, and you're free from it. So, later on in the meditation, you get other little difficulties. You're watching the breath, and then something happens which is not normal. What you think is not normal, everything is normal. You know, I've been a meditator for such a long time, there's very little which you can describe to me which I haven't experienced myself. So that's a great being a teacher, that, you know, you've been there and done it, transcended it, whatever. But when you have strange things which happen in a meditation, such as you get there and it's not a painful feeling, a very pleasant feeling. Maybe your shoulders start to get very hot. Hey, what's going on? It's like burning, it's like a fever, but just in my shoulders. I've never experienced this before. Wow, what to do? Just now's the only time you have. And just, it's right in front of you, this physical feeling in the body is pleasant, nothing wrong with things which are pleasant. So just let it be. Give it importance. Another word for letting be, give it importance. It's the most important thing in the world for you because it's happening right now. It's in front of your mind. And then you care for it. You care for it, just let it be kind to it, see what happens. And you find that those hot spots in the body become great healers. It's all the body healing itself. Some sort of sickness, disease or injury gets alleviated. You see that happening. I told the story, an old story, of Ajahn Chah. This was when I was over in Melbourne. He told me that he had, you know, being a forest monk lots of long years ago, he had malaria. Just about all those forest monks got malaria because they lived in the forest, in the jungle, there's no medicine. So he's having a big malaria attack once, and he got a little bit sort of fed up with it. Instead of getting up and just laying down or whatever, he was meditating, and as the fever came, he decided to just again give it importance. Be with it. Go right into it. And so he said he went right into this, the middle of this fever, without sort of getting up or moving his body while he was meditating. And he said it was just so incredibly hot, but he was in the middle, that little spot inside, which was a cool spot. And he could feel the fever get hotter and hotter and hotter, but because he was in the middle, he, you know, could tolerate it. And it got so hot, it exploded. And that was the end of his malaria. Never got it again. So little things like that, instead of trying to get rid of it, these little things are there to teach you incredible lessons about the nature of the body and the mind and its interaction. Which is why that anything can be used as a meditation object. If you have a fever, if you if you have pain, and if this is the right time, you just go right into it. It's important you be with it and see what happens. And this little method of meditation, when people are really sick or dying, sometimes people said to me, It's okay to meditate when you feel well, but what if you got like you got the flu, or you got sort of an ache or a pain somewhere in the body? You know, I can't meditate when I'm really sick. And of course you can, as long as you understand what the right meditation object is. What's the right meditation object? Whatever's in front of you right now. Whatever that is. And be care for it. Present moment, this is the most important thing in the world, and you care. Because that attitude means you don't fight anything. You don't make business, you don't stress out about what you're experiencing. You're with it. And then it's amazing just how these things change. So even if you're at a stage of meditation, and just like this is the more fun parts of the meditation, where your body starts to vanish, where you can't feel your body. Legs are gone, the back is gone, your head is gone, you don't know where it is. What do? Whatever you're aware of is important. This disappearance is important. Just be aware of it. Don't try and get rid of it. Care for it. All these experiences in meditation are to be valued. Instead of trying to get rid of this, something is going wrong, I'm going to be in big trouble. No, it's important. Stay with it. And then if you go into sort of, the breath has disappeared as well, and you go into these, what many people say, dark places. They call it dark, it's not scary, it's just there's nothing they can focus on. What should I focus on? And they get a bit lost. You don't need to be lost, because you're aware of something. Even the awareness of being lost isn't a thing you can focus on. So whatever it is in front of you, whatever the experience is, you may not recognize it, you may not know it, you may not have been there before, but you're with it. It's important. You let it be. You care for it. And if you do that at all times of the meditation, whatever you're experiencing leads you deeper and deeper into peace and wisdom and freedom. Whatever it is. So right now, what are you aware of? Care for it. And that's really all the meditation instructions you need. Yeah, you see these things happening, just the body and the piezometer and the breath. These are all just stages of the meditation, landmarks which you go through. But what's important is not sort of what you experience, more like how you experience it. Giving every moment importance, whatever it is in front of you right now, the most important meditation object in the whole world. And you care for it. It's mindfulness plus care equals kindfulness. Easy. All you need to know. Okay, so there we go. Now we can actually practice the meditation. So here we go. Getting out your magic carpets. I was actually asking that about the other day in the monastery, the Persian magic carpets. I wonder where they come from. Were they safus where monks or nuns used to levitate through the air and fly through the air? You know, we can't do any levitation these days. Otherwise they'll scramble the jets and shoot us down as unidentified flying monks. Have you got a license to levitate, Ajahn Brahm? So, first of all, just basics before we go on to the deeper meditation. Closing your eyes. Just fully experiencing the body as best you can. And And bringing awareness, first of all, to your legs. Sometimes people meditate and they get a sore knee or a sore butt or sore something or other. And it's just because they weren't careful enough when they began. Mostly that's the cause. Sometimes it is unavoidable, so you have to move during the middle of the meditation. But you can do so much by being careful at the very beginning. So I ask my legs how you feel. As if I ask you how you're feeling today. Because then you can know, you get a reply. My legs. So actually I could do some adjusting, so I'm going to do it. It's better. Especially make sure your knees are not too stressed. If you're sitting on a chair, you just move your legs this way, that way, until you really find the optimum position for them. Really care for the position. Spend extra time. It's helpful. It's not time wasted. Want your legs as comfortable as you can make them. Then you move up to your butt, making sure that it's comfortable on the chair or the cushion. If you want to fidget, please do it now. And then your back, how it feels. Move it until you find the best position. On a chair you can lean back, you can lean forward. Find which one works for you. Find a nice comfortable place for your hands. Basically a place where they're comfortable so you can forget about them. They could look after themselves, they don't need moving. They're up to the shoulders. Relaxing the shoulders. I used to get some aches and pains in those shoulders before because I've never paid attention to them. Now you're aware of them, you really get to know them. You know how to be kind and relax. You can actually feel, I can feel when the muscles tense up. They get like stretched, pulled, stressed. Because I know how those muscles feel, you've got to know them after time. You know just how to let them be, let them relax. Take away the tension. Tension, things, a string, a rope being pulled at both ends. Now imagine letting go at both ends. And it feels free. Relaxed, loose. Up to the throat. Still got some allergies, something or other, I don't know. Itchy, but not that bad. If I cough, it doesn't actually help. You get itchy again. So instead, I just look at that itch, that tiny irritation. It's like I'm kind to it. Let it be. Because the cough is just an attempt to get rid of something. Sometimes I just learn how to be with it. Learn how to let it be. Make friends with the irritation. Can't beat them, join them. So So right now that irritation is the most important thing in the world for me. I care for it. It's my meditation object. Sometimes it's just attention is all it needed. It relaxes. And then you can move up to your face, relaxing all the muscles in your face, around the eyes, around the mouth. Soon get to know those muscles. Just like you can move your finger up and down, you can just relax the muscles around the eyes, the mouth. You can feel them, get feedback, let them open up. No pulling, no pushing, no squashing. Once the body is relaxed, there's still an irritation somewhere. You can focus on it and learn about that part of your body. You may discover that caring for something instead of getting rid of it makes it tolerable. It's also, once the body gets relaxed, it's very helpful just to notice the delight, the pleasant feeling of a body which is more relaxed than usual. It may not be totally free of stress or pain or illness. It's much better than before, and that feels good. The pleasure of a body more at ease than usual, more relaxed than is common. But once you start to recognize and pay attention to the delight of relaxation, you automatically get more relaxed. Aware of the body being relaxed. And then your peaceometer as you go to the mind, the inner world. How peaceful are you? How agitated? That's looking at the peaceometer. Once you're aware of this measure called peace of mind or agitation, once you're aware of it, it's pretty easy to find out what causes agitation what causes peace. It's like Ajahn Chah used to say, a leaf on a tree is still, except when the wind comes and blows it. Your mind is naturally peaceful. It's only when you want something or try to get rid of something. That's what makes the mind agitated. What's done is finished. No business required. So just be. Not wanting anything. Not wanting to get rid of anything. Then you might find some peace. And peace is also delightful. The mind resting. First you may feel sleepy. It's par for the course. You need to restore the energies to charge up. That's what happens when you just allow things to be still and peaceful. Don't interfere with the process. If you are sleepy, it's important. Care for it. Soon, quite naturally, the mind starts to become aware of the breathing. Let these stages of meditation, so-called stages, come to you naturally. Your job is just to welcome and be with whatever's in front of your mind right now. What you are aware of now is important. Care for it. Wherever in this meditation you're in, there's always something to be aware of. And it's what's happening now. There's always something to care for. The importance of now. I'm going to be quiet now until the close to the end of the meditation. close to the end of the meditation. How still is the mind? How peaceful? How free? What of the body? Body relaxed. I'm going to ring the gong 3 times. When he finishes sounding for the 3rd time, you can come out of your meditation. A few questions from USA, Greece, and Poland. From USA, when a distressing memory comes up in meditation, is it right to acknowledge it with kindness before letting it go, or does that lead to indulging in useless thoughts? If a distressing memory just comes up in the meditation, just see if you can stand back from it. As I say, put space between you and that memory, as if you're watching this video on a sort of a computer. You just put space, so you're not entangled in that distressing memory. You can actually watch it from a distance. Because if you get entangled, especially emotionally entangled in the distressing memory, then it's very difficult to transcend it, to understand it. In fact, you tend to feed it that way. So it's a memory, but it only becomes distressing when you really get into it. You really get sucked into it, pulled into it. That old simile of watching a football match or watching a movie, and you're shouting and you're celebrating, you're emotionally involved in the movie because it's like you're right inside the action. So it's good to acknowledge it with kindness. You've got no choice, it's there. But if it's really affecting you, just pull back a little bit, as if you're seeing it from a distance. Another example of that, I was telling people in Melbourne that living in the jungles in Thailand and other places, quite remote jungles, old rainforests, hadn't been colonized at all. Sometimes you come across really wild animals. I remember on this one occasion in my life, I was face to face with a tiger. And it was, just half the distance between me and Thomas over there. Maybe 2/3 the distance, very close. But I wasn't afraid at all. Amazing, you think, this tiger, huge. And there was this little me. But of course, the reason I wasn't afraid was because that actually didn't occur in a jungle. That was when I was visiting a zoo. And there were bars in front of you. So you never got afraid, never got entangled, you never got pulled into it. So that sense of looking at something from a place of safety, instead of getting afraid and emotionally entangled and not really seeing what's happening. If you can just, the bars of the past means it's happened, you're quite safe sitting here, but a memory comes up. So when you put some space between you, some safety space, then you find it's easy. You can see it and it's easy to let it go. So anyway, and useless thoughts, they really just, that shows you're getting really pulled into it. So if you can see it just with silence, Just an old memory, that's all. You survived, you've escaped it. And sometimes people who feel you can learn from the past, you know, you can learn much more from the present. Anyway, from Greece, sometimes I get a feeling, oh, I wonder if this is our assistant treasurer, because apparently G2 is over in Greece, holiday. Sometimes I get a feeling of pure fear, like I'm on the edge of an abyss. I try to concentrate on the breath and let go. Is there a better approach? Yeah, just go over the abyss. Really nice down there. In other words, don't be afraid. You're on the edge of an abyss. All it really is you're going to a new place you've never been to before, and that's how we interpret it. So, the nice thing to do, this an old story, I don't know where she's gone now, but this lady, I always told her how to let go of stuff. And so she had this dream, it's on one of the retreats, she had this dream that she was driving a car and I was sitting in the passenger seat. We were heading over a cliff into the abyss. That's why I remember this little anecdote. And I kept on telling her during the meditation, when she had a problem, just take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, just let go. It's a simile of letting go. And so in the dream, she heard me say to her, take your hand off the steering wheel, feet off, but I'm going over the cliff. Take your hand off the steering wheel. And she did. So we went over the cliff. And as once you're only sort of going down into the abyss, you feel there is a bottom to it. And she saw a long way down was a bottom. And there was a road at the very bottom. But you know, it would obviously go really fast. And at the end of that road, it went a little ways and then had a very sharp right turn. And really sharp. And so as we were hurtling to certain death, I said, just relax, let go. So she did. But you know, she wanted to grab hold of the wheel. I said, no, take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals. And so according to her, we hit the bottom of the cliff. Now the Mandy, it must have been amazing suspension on this car, because it managed to take the impact and just went along the road, and she wanted to grab the steering wheel and turn the car, and said, no, hand off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals. And it automatically made this perfect, sharp right turn, and then was going across smoothly in safety. And I said, now you've done that in a dream, now do that in real life. In meditation, not when you're driving down the freeway. But just in meditation. So if you try to concentrate on the breath and let go, that just makes you just more tense. And you all know what I think about concentration. That doesn't lead to stillness. That's more pressure, more tension on you. So if you're under fear, you've got nothing to lose except the fear itself. So you have that fear there and just let it be. We've got to be afraid of. So little by little, it's afraid of, you don't know what's happening next, but I've been there, done that, you're quite safe. So all you need to do is just this is the most important time right now. Whatever you're experiencing right now, it's important. That feeling is important. Don't know why, but it's important. And just have this beautiful kindness, this care. This softness, this love, this compassion. It's amazing just what that does. So much kindness, compassion, just relax so much. And then things work out. So this is just a general thing that whenever you do have any fear, it's fear is going to places you've never been before. And it's usually always really, really wonderful. So no need to be afraid. And that's here from Poland. I am a beginner with meditation, would like to know if it is a mistake to change position during meditation. No, you can change position. It's just don't do it too easily, too fast. But it does, and I feel, do I really need to change? Is it just an irritation? sometimes I find I'm not comfortable. Should I move or try another technique? If you're not comfortable, just then, beginning meditation, just move. Try and find the best posture for yourself. And sometimes, you know, get a nice chair. Don't be proud and think, I'm young and fit, I don't need a chair. A chair is only for old, decrepit people like Ajahn Brahm. But I actually don't need a chair because I got used to this when I was very young. I'm very comfortable like this. It's actually, the way I'm not comfortable is when you sort of meditate on an aircraft. It's really, you know, really quite, cramped. And I had on a chair. Now, every time I ask, is it okay if I just meditate in the aisle? I say, no. There's no other place to sit down. Anyway, I won't go there. But I often thought, actually, I will go there. You know, if you had, like, real airlines for, you know, Asian Airlines, you know, where people, you know, people grow up sitting on the floor. What do you need chairs for? So you can imagine, if you had just an ordinary aircraft, you know, the economy class, if people were sitting on the chairs, on the floors, you can get twice as many people in. And upstairs and downstairs, you know, not a big, as you just sit on the chair, sit on the floor there, it'd be far better, more people. So if I had my own airline, I'd have, you know, just cross-legged people only, so you can just sit cross-legged down there, have a lovely flight. And it's much better, you know, much more stable, so you wouldn't need so many seat belts and stuff. What do you reckon? Anyway, I'm full of stupid ideas. That's why I became a monk instead of Richard Branson. So anyway, should I move to another technique? No, just if you want to, you can try this little technique. So you're sitting down here, beginning meditation, and you haven't done much meditation before, and then after a few minutes, you feel a bit tense, feel a bit uncomfortable. When the first thought comes up, I should move, don't. Say no. Second thought comes up, I should move, forget about it. The third time, then move. Just, you know, a little bit of resistance, just see if it's just the mind being restless. So one, two, and the third one, you can move. Okay, so that's from overseas, from USA, Greece, and Poland. What about from here? Has anyone got any questions from here? It's interesting, I was just talking about Greece because, you know, the Greek philosophy, we always thought that democracy and philosophy started from Greece. But even Pythagoras, he would say he got all his philosophy from the Indians. Interesting. And there was this famous early Christian philosopher called Origen. Like Origin, but with an E before the N. And it's the monks know about this gentleman because down in Balingup, there's a Buddhist monastery down there called the Origen Center. It's a Buddhist monastery, and a couple of our monks are very likely to go down there to spend the rains retreat. So the Origen Balingup. But why do they call it the Origen Center? And the reason it came up today was because Lucky, is she here? Or is she gone now? She's over there. Oh, there you are. Because she's saying she was going to go visit sort of UK and go to Cambridge where I studied and go and have a visit to the old college. But in their chapel, which was designed by the famous architect Christopher Wren, that there's four stained glass windows. And one of those stained glass windows is of this Christian called Origen. He was that famous. They put him in one of the stained glass windows. And he, not much is known about him, except he was Greek, he Christian, and he was an early church father. But most of his stuff was burned because he was heretical. he believed in reincarnation. But he was good enough at the time in other matters to be considered a very powerful advocate for Christianity. But they asked, when I read about him, who was his teacher? And he claimed to be a disciple of Ammonius Saka. And no one knows who this teacher was. No record of him, just his very famous teacher, until you look at that. And you know, because traveling all over the world, in Australian passport even, my official name is Bhikkhu Brahma Wangso, but the first line is Brahma Wangso, and underneath is Bhikkhu. So a lot of times people call me Mr. Bhikkhu. They think that Brahma Wangso is the first name. So we do that, we get our names, the first name and the second name sometimes get swapped around. So swap around Ammonius Saka, and it becomes Sakamonius. Say that quickly with the changings. When they anglicize a word on this side, they Greekify it, Hellenize it. It becomes Sakamuni. Do you remember that word? Who was the very famous teacher, Sakyamuni? Of course, problem solved. His great disciple Origen, who came in to Christianity. So, there we go. So, things get complicated, they go intertwined. The world is not as separated as we think. So anyway, that's what I just kill a bit of time by just saying that little anecdote. Anyone got any questions to ask? Very good, okay. So now we can finish today's session. There is going to be a sutta class tomorrow. Those of you who are, most of the sutta junkies will be over at Jhana Grove. Ajahn Brahmani is giving a sutta retreat down there. But still, you know, it's amazing just how many people have just had 9 days of suttas, and they come over here at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, they come for more. Can't understand it myself, but there we go. So anyway, that's going to be a sutta class tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 4:30, and that will be on the Potapada Sutta. Never before discussed on the sutta class. It is a world premiere. Is that what they call it? Okay, that's coming tomorrow, so enough for now. So we now pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then whatever.